Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2022 Home Education Conference held in Morristown, Tennessee.
Oh, hello! How are we today?
Good.
Glad to hear it. So I'm Ian Cox, and we are going to talk about the basic principles of TJ Ed. So I'm going to give a big picture overview. So this is the fundamentals of leadership education, the principles, and the process. So first off, I want to start with two fallacies, with two questions. So there's two fallacies that we got to start with to lay a foundation of how we approach our mindset with education. The first one is our belief that, actually, no, before I give them, let me just ask you this. Let's start with the non-rhetorical question. Whose job is it to educate our children? Let's start there. Whose job is it to educate our children? Somebody's volunteering. It's hers. Everybody, did you see that? You go ahead, take your kids right back. Who here is new to TJ Ed? No hands, so we have a few people. Who's here familiar with TJ Ed before? Excellent. Okay. All right, that's about normal. I think a lot of you guys are saying that's the reason why you're here, probably homeschooling, because you think it's the parent's job to educate the child, right? If you go to public school, you send your kids there, and then it's the teacher's job to educate the child, right? Okay, yes, that is what we think. And that's what I thought for a lot of my life. We always think that it's somebody else's job to educate our children. It's actually a fallacy. It's not your job, and it's not a teacher's job. It's not an expert's job. The first fallacy that we buy into as a society right now is that I can educate another individual. And point two follows from that, that it's either the parent's job or it's the teacher's job, the mentor's job, to do the educating. So when you dig into the core of what education is, and see, and this is kind of splitting hairs here with a couple of you guys and getting into a little bit of the nuance here, but we're doing that on purpose, and I'm starting on this point on purpose because having that mindset of how we approach it changes everything that follows. Just a slight little tweak. It is actually a fallacy that one individual can educate another individual. Just think about your life. Think about your kids, especially if you have teens. Or a three-year-old. No! If they don't want to know something, they will move heaven and earth to not know it. If you have a hobby and you get excited about something, you will move heaven and earth to understand the most random and pointless stuff. You can't actually educate another individual. Which means, guess what? It's not your job to do it. Isn't that relieving?
Yeah.
Good. Now, it doesn't mean you don't have a job and that it's not really hard and that you don't have to do it consistently and constantly. But it does mean that that the stress and the pressure that we put on ourselves and our kids may not be the exact right stress and pressure that we should be putting on ourselves and our kids. Those are the two fallacies that we often buy into. I can educate another, and it's the parent's or teacher's job to do the educating. It's actually the student's job. It is a hands down 100% the student's job to learn and educate themselves. And it is hands down absolutely the parent's job, the mentor's job, to inspire the desire to go and learn. Because if the teen doesn't want to learn it, or they get pressure and consequences so that they learn for the test, I mean, it's amazing digging into the psychology and the studies on this, where people can go and pass a test, and literally some of the studies are 3 days later, and they call them into the clinic, and say, all right, now retake the test, and they can't pass it. Like, how quick we cash out our short-term memory is amazing.
So if we want to actually know something, not just live for a test, but know something, the youth, the individual, I mean, this is the same for you and I, right? We have to actually care about it and buy into it. We have to get educated. So again, it's parents' teachers' job to then inspire, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. So the tricky part with this, once we tweak that mindset just a little bit, when we talk about principles, TG Ed is very principle-based, which is one reason why a lot of people are attracted to it, one reason why a lot of people like it, one reason why I found it and then stuck with it. It took me a while. It usually takes people a while to cycle back through and through for it to sink in a little bit more and more. Because it's not really easy to say, the principle is to inspire your kids to then educate themselves. You can say that, but then you go home with those kids and and then all bets are off, right? It's a tricky process, and you say, okay, but what do I do? How do I do that? How do I do TJ Ed? I've heard that, I don't know how many hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of them. That is the number one response we get with TJ Ed, but how do we do it? But my kids, they're not doing math. They're not studying math. They're not doing the, all right, when was the last time you read a math class? And then they kind of phase off and don't see them for a while, and then they come back later. Because each family, each individual, we're going to get into the phases, what's called the phases of learning. So if you've studied child development, that's basically what we're going to go through. It's the development of the child. In each period of our life, we are ready for something different. We need something different. Little children need something different than adults do, right? Doesn't that make sense? And then there are benchmarks of development as we age, as we get older, that literally enable us to learn and understand different things. Abstract reasoning doesn't happen with little children. Memorizing the addition and going through times tables as little children is just that rote, forced memorization. Their brain doesn't actually compute it. It doesn't make sense. So doing math memorization as a little child actually is not helpful in the long run. It can actually set them back in math in some cases. But when you do math memorization at the right point in their educational process, it comes so quick and easy. So we're going to look at and set ourselves up in understanding this broad flow of the phases so that we can put the proper things in their proper places and have it be as easy as possible, instead of pushing against literally our brain capacity. So the principles, because we tell you to go inspire, or we talk about the principle of core phase and how do you approach it. That's the very beginner. Think of an apple, right? The very core, the very center of an apple. Because you never leave a phase. You're always in all the phases. And you just layer and they just get added onto. So we'll state these principles, and then you have to go home. Say, okay, how do I inspire? Because maybe somebody over here says, well, my kid hates math. And maybe somebody over here says, my child loves math and won't do anything else. I've mentored students on both sides of that spectrum. And what you do is drastically different in these two families. Maybe one child loves reading. Maybe another child has ADHD or dyslexia and they can't, or they hate reading. It's just a struggle. So we talk a lot in principles because there is no one size fits all in education. As soon as you put a cookie cutter conveyor belt process onto human beings, it's broken. It either breaks the system or it breaks the human being. It doesn't work. Human beings are too organic to work through a conveyor belt process. Now there are processes and there are principles that govern development and growth that are universal and true for everybody. And then once again, you get into the process of what you actually do day in, day out, and it is drastically different. And as families here, you all understand that that can change. That is often drastically different from week to week, right? One day your son is this person, and the next week you look at him and say, who are you? You're different from last week, right? The development and change of family dynamics of child development is just so chaotic. It's exhausting sometimes to try and keep up with our kids. So, stop trying to put in the cookie cutter clean conveyor belt process, because it doesn't work. It's just stressful, it's hard, they hate it, you hate it, and in the end, it doesn't work. But the principles will work every single time. So now the trick is not trying to figure out what math book do we do or what curriculum do we do. The trick is, all right, here's the principle, and what does my child, what does Sally need from me this week? How can I support them? What do we do this week? Our energy patterns, we usually go in about week flows. If you do it for a year, do it for a month, you can have some big goals and things like that that are kind of guides that you're aiming for. Like having a good human being that leaves your home. That's a good goal to aim for or something. Or maybe getting a perfect score on the ACT. Maybe that's a goal. That's totally fine. But it doesn't govern, it's not a really good guiding star. And if you do a month, that's usually too long. You get bored, you forget about it. But if it's a week by week, it usually works really well. Week chunks flow and usually work really well. And then you break that week down, and then you get up in the morning, or when you go out down for night, you look at the next day and say, all right, what is the next day specifically in this week plan or in this week flow? So the trick is just mastering how to discern what is yours to do with a given principle. That's the only answer you have to find. Everything else will fall into place. If you're looking at the principle, how can I inspire? I'm just picking this one as an example. There's seven keys of great teaching that I'm going to go through in detail. Inspire, not require, is one of them. But this principle of inspiring, you sit down and say, all right, what do I need to do to inspire this week? I have this shortcoming, we have this problem, we have this issue, we need to learn this thing, or my child has that goal, or whatever the questions are. We all have dozens and dozens of questions for each of our child, right? I just reheard what I said. Each of our children, that was a plural. Writing is so much better because you can read those silly things that you say and then fix it, and nobody knows that you said a silly thing. That's great. Oh, focus on what's mine to do, right? You look at that week, the principle is, all right, I'm going to inspire this week. That's what I need to focus on. That's the principle I need to implement this week. So what do I do? And that's the only thing. And then the curriculum will come up. The specific, what do? I need a mentor. And sometimes that'll be, in more semesters, so that'll be a little bit of a bigger picture. So you are finding the resources, you're finding the solutions, you're finding the actions that will then apply and, not apply, that will implement and successfully live that principle. So we can't tell you, do X, Y, Z. Pick out this textbook and do chapter 2. And then all of everybody here, your problems will be solved. Because it doesn't work like that. There's too many different needs from week to week. And maybe chapter 2 in that textbook is exactly what you need 3 weeks from now. Or maybe a month ago, and sorry, you're just getting to it now. But at least the answer came now, because you've been looking and asking the question, trying to discern how to live that principle. But that's the only thing you ever have to do. Find those correct, solid principles, and then ask the question, how do I live that this week? Literally, that will answer every question you have. And that's why it's kind of hard to do TG Ed. It's because we say, go be amazing. Go inspire. And you say, awesome. I love that. And then you look at your kids and say, ah! And you run for the hills, because that's what I did multiple times. I still do. Emma still does. My wife, who grew up in TJ Ed, still calls her mom and says, Mom, the kids are... And then Mom backtracks her, says, where's the principal? Maybe is it this? Is it that? We diagnose it, we question, we pray, we go through the process until we find the answer, because it's different depending on the circumstance. There is no one-size-fits-all. The answer to life. Love everything. 42, actually. It's not... No response, really? Nobody's a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Alright. that's one strike on you guys. That's send you to the principal's office. You gotta read more funny books. Let's get into phases. Let's get into some of the principles here. Is that making sense, though? I'm feeling like we've got that pretty solid. There's not one size fits all. Principles are tough. Deal with it. We got a master, and we're going to live with it. And then when you know how to discern how to apply a principle day in and day out, and that is literally the answer to life. Yeah?
TJ.
Oh, the acronym, TJED, thank you. I'm glad you brought that. TJED. TJED. So it's TJED. Thomas Jefferson Education. Or Leadership Education. Thank you for asking that. Usually, I'm supposed to start out with that with the TJ Basics talk. You got my back. I'll pay you afterwards. So the phases. So the first one I brought up, we have an apple. Think of an apple. We have core phase. Core phase is generally 0 to 8. And again, the ages are ish. Because it depends on the specific development and physiology of the individual child. The core phase is all about learning right, wrong, true, false, good, bad, black and white. It's your values, it's your virtues, working on character, a lot of play, lack time. That's core phase. Again, it's usually 0 to 8. We never leave core phase. We never leave any of the phases. You never leave them behind. Oliver and Rachel DeMille had a daughter who was in their mid-teens who had a little bit of trauma as a child and needed to renegotiate her core phase. And guess what they did for a few months when they were saying, all right, there's something struggling here. There's something up here. And so they were praying and seeking to find, what do I do with this principle? And they realized, oh, our 16-year-old needs lag time. They need some mommy, daddy love and comfort. And so that's what they did for several months. They cuddled her. They had mommy and daddy lag time. They had some conversation time. They had, you know, a mom date or a dad date. And they just spent some good core phase time reconnecting and rebuilding and helped her through that healing process so that she could take the next step. So again, we don't ever leave that. And if we're, as adults, I mean, we are always in need of renegotiating that core phase. Especially coming out of the COVID PTSD syndromes. We all need that loving nurturing. We all need it. We never actually leave it. But child development-wise, it's about 0 to 8. The next phase is love of learning. Number 2. Now we're getting into a little bit more of the substance of the apple. The love of learning is exactly what it sounds like. You're from about 8 to 12 to 13-ish. And the point here is to just play at learning. You experiment with learning. I love Benazet wrote this essay. He's a mathematician. He says, why do we teach math in a way that destroys the love of learning of math? He says, so he opens his argument up with this portrayal. He says, I had this nightmare. Because I woke up with sweat beating down because I had this nightmare. I was in this world where as a little child, there was no music. You couldn't do music, you couldn't sing. You know little children that just love to belt it and just sing? My little Rebecca, her life is literally a musical. I think 80% of her waking time is spent singing at the top of her lungs. But there's no music. You can't do that. That's too advanced. You have to sit down and memorize the clefs. It's not, oh yes, the clefs and the staffs. Yes, there we go. Thank you. The staff and where the notes go. You know, quarter notes and half notes and your dotted quarter notes. And you have to go through and you have to memorize. You can't sing yet. That's way too advanced. You can't really get into composition and making up songs until you're a PhD at least. So don't even try. Don't do that. That's not allowed here. You have to memorize the notes and where they go, and then you have to copy, you know, take home your worksheets and copy, you know, Beethoven's symphonies, Mozart, and you have to copy these and memorize them and do all this work to, and then once you go through that in elementary and then high school, then you'll get into a little bit of music theory. The development of music and some of the great music, you know, musical artists, what they did and what they contribute. But maybe you can start doing that. What's the recorder flute thing? Maybe you can do a little bit of practicing on that, just the basic scales in high school, maybe if you qualify for the advanced classes. And then college, you can start playing some instruments. And then by the time you get your PhD, that's where you're allowed, you can with music, then create your own types of ditties. And he said he woke up with a sweat. So thank goodness we don't live in a world where we kill music. So why do we do that with math? Why do we not play with math and just make that a natural, normal piece of our everyday life? From the time that they're little tiny, why can you not just make up numbers and create, going with the little kids, they don't understand that you have to be 1, 2, 3, what? Timothy, why can't it be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 15, 16, 18, 12, 3? And he'll do that. He repeats it almost verbatim. And we play games, and I go through and say, all right, let's count to 20 together, and we'll count fingers and toes, and we'll do beans, and we'll... So, I mean, that tangible, especially young, it's tangible. It can't be abstract. It has to be tangible, where you can play with it with your hands, right? But why can't we just play with math and just be okay that he's just a little tiny kid who's just experimenting and playing with the world. He's owning the world around him. And then I get to see how he perceives the world around him. And we play with the symbols on these pages. It's like, oh, do you know what that is? Oh, it's a one. Hey, good job. You didn't know that 3 months ago. What number is that? Oh, that's a 10. Hey, fantastic. That's really fun. We were just in church the other week. And he pointed, hey, Dad, there's an 8. He was seeing the numbers on the wall that says what hymn we're singing. He said, Dad, that's an 8. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. What's the next one? And he read them right to left. And he did all of them. He was able to read all the numbers and said, oh, that's fantastic. And guess what? You want to know something? Usually, the general rule is that we start on the left side and go to the right. And so the hundreds column is 300, and the tens column there's a 0, and the ones column there's a 1. 301. I can see it. I can tell. Nothing was sinking in. But I love doing that. I'm just playing with it and just sharing, just experimenting and saying, oh, so the next one, there's a 2 in the hundreds column, there's an 8 in the tens column, and a 3 in the ones column. So that's 283. That's how you would see and read that number. And by the time I got to the third one, I could tell he was glazing over and wanted to move on, didn't care anymore, and was saying, all right, the next one I went through pretty quick and said, hey, that's pretty cool, but how you read it, that was awesome. You got all those numbers, and I went and reaffirmed. And so we often do little tirades, little random rabbit holes. There's been some pretty cool things happening in space, some telescopes, rovers on Mars, and helicopters, the first helicopter flight on Mars. And so we would do some research, we'd do some daddy laptop, and I'd watch some videos about people explaining and teaching this. And my tiny little quarter phase kids love that. But they're getting exploded, and it's becoming familiar in that love of learning phase. You're just looking for things to get familiar. Because if they don't ever play with math, then later when you say you're supposed to learn math, they're going to say, yeah, it's so foreign. It just makes no sense to me. It's because they had no context for it. They had nothing to base it on. A fantasy series that I picked up that a lot of my in-laws and siblings and some friends really, really liked and really enjoyed. And so I started listening to it as I was traveling and doing it on Audible. And I had a really hard time getting into it. Because the world that this author created was just so different. It was based on the sea. I've lived in the desert and mountains my entire life. So I knew about things, but it was just so foreign to me. I just had a hard time connecting with it. It took me a really long time to understand what the author was even getting at and how to picture this world and these creatures. I just had no context for it. And so I don't care. Love of learning is about caring about everything and anything, seeing what they're passionate about and running with it, and then introducing them to, oh, actually, we go from left to right. He has no idea what left to right is, but if I say that 100 times over the next 2, 3 years, he'll figure it out. He'll recognize, oh, that's what, it'll just naturally, organically flow and connect. Again, that's not the approach that you have to do. That's my approach that works really well for me, that I really like, that I really enjoy. I know there's like cool songs and tricks, and you know, people will do a song for everything to learn something, and that works really, really well. Emma has a few that she did as a child, so she always brings those up and uses those with the kids. I don't really have a lot of songs that I just know and remember, so I don't do that. There's no one way to do this, right? There's a lot of really great ways to apply this principle. Love of learning is about to just explore and fall in love with anything and everything. And you're going to play at learning. 8 to 12 is not time to sit down and memorize a textbook or to do a whole bunch of worksheets. It might include that. It might absolutely include that. Your young boys, Well, almost never. It's not an absolute principle, but it is a pretty common principle. For them, their curriculum will include running across the hills for a half an hour and back, and then sitting down for a half an hour study with mom or dad or some book or listen, you know, some learning something, and then they have to run coming back, right? That is part of the girls don't always have to do that. Sometimes they do, but right, so everybody's a little bit different, and that's okay. It still works out. The next phase. Oh, I'm glad I glanced at my notes right there. Love of learning, another important key piece of love of learning is family work. Family work is a critical piece from love of learning and scholar faith, of coming together, of supporting the family, being part of a society, having duties, responsibility, and consequences for not doing family work. Family work's a great one. Who was it yesterday? Somebody was talking yesterday morning. God sent his kids to have slave labor, to clean up. Unfortunately, we have to have a long time to train them to be any good at it. And it's usually once they leave home and then come back, at least this is what I did. I said, Mom, I'm sorry. I'll do the dishes after, I'll clean up after myself now, I'm sorry. So it took me a while. So it doesn't actually work that well that way, but they're there to work. Our kids, they need to do family work. Scholar phase is the next one. Scholar phase is the teen years. 12, 13 to 18-ish. And it's really, you enter scholar phase in puberty. Doing scholar phase before puberty doesn't work. It just adds a lot of strain, a lot of stress. And the literal brain development isn't there for the scholar type studies and focus and questions. And so again, it's not that one, you're not just saying, all right, is my child ready for it? I'm ready for them to want it. That's always the exciting place when our youth step into scholar phase and really dig in to knowledge and information and really get to learning details and specifics and doing a lot of hours of study so that you can show them off to your friends and family. But we have to step back, and it really isn't time before puberty, which is why girls usually enter scholar phase earlier than boys. So really, you're coming into scholar phase, it's kind of a gradual process. None of these are a stark overnight. All of these have a transition period, and there's principles governing those transition periods. But right around puberty is where you're going to start looking and seeing boys being able to focus, at least more. They still often need to run over some hills and back again, but they're able to sit down and they can focus and they can think in different ways that literally they were not able to before. Brain development, your physiological development, is a very real aspect in education. Scholar phase, again, is for me, that's where a lot of the fun happens. So in early scholar phase, your first few years, you're probably going to start off with about 2 hours of reading a day, 4 or 5 times a week. And you're looking for that benchmark of four. Once you're in 4 hours a day, 4 to 5 times a week, what, 9 to 11 months of the year, 9 or 10 months of the year. And that's really when you're in scholar phase. That's when a child is into their scholar studies. Again, once you're at about 4 hours a day. Later scholar phase, you're looking at 8 to plus hours a day of doing scholar study. That means you have a book, you have a pen, you have a notebook, and you're studying. That doesn't mean class time. In TGA, we don't count class time, lecture time, as actual scholar studies, because I cannot educate you. We can transfer and share passion and information, but if they're not taking notes, if they're not listening, if they're not thinking about it, if they're not discussing it, if they're not involved in it, then it's not learning, it's not happening. And so just as a general rule, we don't count class time as study time. We count discussion time, we count writing time, we count reading time as scholar hours. So over about 4 years following that process, again, you can get into hero education that digs really deeply into what is scholar phase, how do you do it, and what is the blueprint, what does it look like, the different ins and outs of the principles and the process of scholar phase. But you're looking at about 5,000 hours of the student themselves studying and learning. It's interesting, I asked Oliver once, he said, why 5,000 hours? Because you hear Gladwell and you hear Nesbitt, and there's several others, some business leaders and psychologists, and there's that number pops up in a lot of different places, right? So I said, why five? Are you kind of just laying on their studies and on their experience? Or he said, no, from the 20 years or so of mentoring youth and young adults, when they put 5,000 hours, about, again, it's a principle, it's not, you're not looking, don't get so meticulous about, all right, checking the box on every hour that you do, right? We're just looking for that ballpark range of about 5,000. What happens is the neurological development in our brain as we learn to think, not what to think or how to think, but just learning to think. Sorry, not how to think, when to think is what I was after. It's not learning what to think or when to think, but it is learning how to think that we're after. That's what we're developing in love of learning and then finalizing in scholar phase, is learning how to think. Because then whatever problem you're faced with, you know how to find the answer. Because the future, we don't know it. The crisis that we're currently living in, we don't know if it's going to be more disease and sickness, or if it's going to be an external war, an internal war, if it's going to be a meteorite, if it's going to be the giant caldera in Wyoming that explodes. We do not know what the future is going to hold. We can't know it. And that's not the point. The point is for us to know how to be individuals who can solve any crisis that comes, that can solve any problem that comes. And when we know how to think, we know how to learn, we know how to connect and interlock with other people, we can solve any problem. It doesn't matter what it is. All of a sudden, trying to forecast, it's important to understand cycles and development. But knowing exactly what's going to happen, why bother? If I'm an individual who knows how to solve problems, problem solved. It doesn't matter what it is. Does that make sense? It's a powerful principle. And so we have to look at, especially in the scholar phase, because we want to sit down and say, all right, here's the check boxes, here's the grades, here's what Uncle Larry's saying, and here's what our neighbor Sally's saying, and so you've got to step it up. We go back to that cookie-cutter conveyor belt mentality. We have to meet these external criteria. We have to ask ourselves, what is pilot and what is co-pilot? Would you guys be okay? Here's a few options. Would you guys be okay if one of your children leaves home, your next child, whoever's up next, your child leaves home and they have solid family relationships and they're a generally good person and they have a solid testimony, but they don't know anything about math? Is that a success? Is that okay? Is that okay? Have you succeeded as a parent? Can they succeed as a human being? What if they have never read Shakespeare? What if they fail the ACT? What if they don't get accepted into college? Or what if they decide not to go to college, but they have solid, those three things, is that okay? What is pilot, what is co-pilot? Because often we do the reverse. I think that's one of the struggles with the conveyor belt system and our current, these fallacies that we hold on to. We white knuckle, because that's what we know, that's what we understand. And that's okay, it takes time to shift. Some wandering in the wilderness, if you will. What's pilot, what's co-pilot? I agree with you, I don't think math trumps a testimony or family relationship. Because guess what? I have a good friend, her son wanted to go to UCLA, needed a scholarship, and he didn't touch math. He had to have, I can't remember what it was, up to trigonometry maybe? And he did like basic math because mom said, you need some basic math. You need this bare minimum. And I was like, really bare minimum. So you need this at least bare minimum. So she worked with him on that and said, okay, if you don't want to do anything else, you know, I recommend it. She was reading math classics. She was inviting him. She was doing her inspiring part. She was doing her role. Her kids are fantastic. Her family's awesome. And he said, mom, I hate math. I'm not doing it. I said, well, especially as a 16-year-old boy who's grown bigger and bigger than him, I guess. I recommend you do it. I'm setting the example to do it. I'm teaching it. I'm sharing. I'm inspiring. So, your choice. And then he said, all right, this is the next step. This is what I want to do. And I have to have this level of math. And she said, well, wouldn't it have been nice if you had done it gradually over the last 4 years? And he says, yeah, but I didn't. So, he spent a summer and did 3 years of high school math. And passed it with high, one of the top in the class. with getting that class and getting the scholarship and getting accepted into the college that we wanted to. When we want something, whatever the problem is, we will move heaven and earth to get it. That's true from a little tiny little kid. They want to run to the road, and they are going to run to the road. And so you either have to tie them up, hold their hand, walk around with them the whole time so they don't. When we get our mind set to something, we will absolutely do it. Our kids, if they know how to think, if they know how to learn, if they love learning, and parents and mentors are there to support and guide them and inspire them, it'll happen. If that's what they need for their next, that's their goal, that's their vision, it is going to happen. That's scholar phase, 5,000 hours, that's what we're aiming for. Next phase, depth phase. You do 5,000 more. There's another benchmark. When you add another 5,000, oh, I never finished that story, Oliver. I asked him, why 5,000? And then the next 10,000. He says, because there is a literal trigger that switches in the brain. And then as I've been working with youth for the last decade plus, and mentoring with parents, and then looking and going through my own educational journey and analyzing that, it's very interesting. Pretty quickly, as you're talking, discussing classes and ideas and thinking, and you can see where students are at on this path. All right, are you on the tail end of these 5,000? Again, however many hours it is. But are you thinking broadly, deeply, well? Are you diplomatic? Are you considering these things? Are you covering the bases? Are you thinking logically, mathematically? Are you thinking artistically and creatively? And you can tell where people are at on their scholar journey. I didn't finish my scholar phase until my early 20s. I didn't put in enough hours in my teens. I did study, but it wasn't much as I wish now that I would have done. But it doesn't matter. Again, you add these phases, they are layered, they go in progression. So even if you're 80 years old, if you didn't get a full scholar phase that teaches you how to think, because a lot of people with PhDs know really when to think. They have a depth phase, but they don't have a scholar phase. You can kind of circumvent it that way, but then it really limits your thinking. So it's best to layer these, get the breadth. Scholar phase is about the breadth of education. You're going to study as much as you can, as many great classics as you can. And then depth phase, you're going to get a focus. You're going to get mastery in your mission, a mastery in your field of your choice. You're going to become an expert in that field. But an expert who can think, not an expert who says, I'm an expert, and I'm an expert, and I'm an expert, therefore, I'm an expert. So why are you even thinking anything different? Because I'm an expert, obviously. That's not the expert we're looking for. We're looking for the breadth mixed with that expert really makes a powerful leader. A Thomas Jefferson who knows a lot about everything and then had mastery in history and political science or forms of government. So I'm going to go through these seven keys of great teaching really quick, because there's articles that you can get on tged.org and at the my speaking site that I have, the tged.notion.site. I'll go through and I'll add articles for these so you can just have a quick reference to those, my talk notes there on my event site there. And you can dig more into these, get the Thomas Jefferson Education book. It goes really deep into these seven keys of what it looks like, of how to live these principles, how to transition from the conveyor belt, how to develop this mindset, and then how to pass that on and actually implement it into your kids' lives. So the seven keys, really quick. Classics, not textbooks, and not fluff. Mentors, not professors, and not just pals. Inspire, not require, but also not neglect. Quality, not conformity, and also not contempt. Time, not content. And I was talking about that a little bit earlier. It's about the hours, the time that you put into thinking, not the specific content. You can read pretty mediocre books, and if you're thinking, you can get some amazing things out of it. That's why books like Dr. Seuss can be really simple children's book that have just so much to think about, to discuss. It's about your time spent not the specific content. Content's important, don't get me wrong, content's important, but it is not pilot. Time spent is what develops and grows the brain and develops character. Time, not content, and not ignore. Simplicity, not complexity, and also not chaos. So we're looking for the golden mean in these principles. Classics, mentors, inspire, quality, time, simplicity. And the last one is you, not them. Rooting into those fallacies that we buy into, that it's my job and that I have to make you. No. You set the example. You show reading, discussing, learning, loving learning. You show the example of scholar phases. For mom and dad, it looks different. You're not going to be spending 8 hours a day in a book most of the time. You can't. That's not your role. That's not your phase. But the little bit that you do, even if it's when they're in bed, makes all the difference. They feel it. The home is different. I promise you, with TGN, we work with literally thousands upon thousands of families all over the world, and it's been true everywhere. The families that read and discuss and mentor are the families where they say, oh, it's working. I understand it. And where we don't, and I've experienced this personally in my own life, and when you don't, you say, I don't get it. It's not working. Well, that's the three fundamental actions. You're going to go from the principles that it's great to do classics, not textbooks and not fluff. It's great to you, not them. It's great to inspire, not require. That's awesome. Good principles, they resonate. All right, but now the number one takeaway of the process of what do you do leaving here today, this conference that you've been at for these last 2 days. There's three basic things to do as you're trying to figure it out and understand and master these principles. There's three basic things. Number one, read, read, read. Doesn't matter what. Pick up a book and just start. Lean into a classic, lean into something that's going to be tough for you, lean into something, if you don't like reading, pick up something that's just fun, that will do all the work for you. You don't have to do any work to get into it. If you have teens that struggle with reading, that's where you start. Start with something fun. Just get into the habit of putting time into reading, and then the quality will come. I promise you the quality will come. Read, 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 that's what you do. Number two, discuss a lot. Either writing, write a book report, get on Amazon, write a little review. Whatever you have to do to have some output, to have some outlet, to share some thoughts, to have to perform for somebody. Share an idea, a quote, a something, anything from the book that you're reading, and share it with somebody else, or yourself, again, in a notebook. Underline things, circle things, write with a pen in your notebook. I started with a pencil because I like to be able to erase, and then they fade after a while. Just use a pen, because then it lasts for posterity, and it's good. You can use a pencil if you want, that's fine, I won't judge you too much. Discuss a lot. That's what challenges our mind, our thinking. That's what hones our brain, our ideas. It spreads light to other people. It builds ourselves. I love going through books that I read years ago and looking at my notes and like, that's silly. I say, and then I argue with myself and say, well, it's actually this way. In some of my books, I have like two or three phases that I've been through and cycled through that book, and I'm adding different layers and context. Well, I love reading books with Emma because there's a few books where we have some layered discussions going on where I'll write something and then she responds to it like, oh, well, that's a really good point, Emma. I love this because of... So we have, when you start writing and discussing in these books, discussing with people verbally written, that's what really drives home the education, the thinking. Discuss a lot. And number three, it's really only 10% of the action of what you're actually going to do. But it's the 10% that makes all the rest of the difference. And that's mentoring. Having a mentor, you sit down with the book and saying, I hate this book. And they say, oh, I love it. And they help inspire you to find the lesson, to hate the book for the right reasons, or to argue with you and say, hey, but did you see this? To take a book like Animal Farm and pull out the symbolism. Who do the dogs represent? Who do the pigs represent? That's when you get into transformational learning, where it goes straight to their core and they become different human beings. That is the process of rubbing shoulders with greatness. When you get into classics, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, join the conversation, join the debate, and then mentor with it. Get somebody who has that perspective, who's been further down the road. It's tracks in a snowfield, going to a mountain or hiking, you know, going, if this was covered in snow, which I don't know if it ever really is covered in that much snow, but in Utah we get a lot of snow in most places. And it's really hard to go through a field like this, wading through 3, 4, 5 feet of snow. But if there's tracks already blazed, it's really easy to almost run through a snowfield, right? That mentoring is just a little piece. It doesn't do all the work for you. It can't give you everything. It's just a little bit of inspiration, a little bit of direction, a little bit of, hey, think about this. Those questions in the right places or those lectures in the right times, that makes all the difference. So what you're going to do coming out of here this weekend, I hope, I invite you, I challenge you, is read a whole bunch, discuss a lot, go get some mentoring, and be that mentor for your children. Thank you guys very much.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.